Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Whiskey 8, Mike Whiskey, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish a contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. Your net controls are many this evening. My call is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My name is Kathleen. I'm located in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida. I'm merely opening it up this evening. And all I can tell you about the temperature is it's hot, hot, hot. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, I ask you to come aboard. All right. Hearing no emergency traffic, I always say that's a great thing. How about anyone celebrating their birthday this week, maybe last week, today, next week, who would like to come aboard? And so we could say happy, happy. That includes anniversaries or anything special as well. So if anyone's out there that wants us to celebrate, please come aboard. All right. I always say this. This means we're not getting any older. Now, this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speakers. Now let me advise all stations connected that this net will be recorded this evening and put on our website as a future podcast. All stations participating will be part of this recording. Once again, our topic this evening is a Raspberry Pi. So at this point, I'm going to throw it over to KY6V and see what kind of fun we can have this evening. KY6V, are you ready to take the gavel?
Yes, I am, Kathy. Thank you. Good evening, all. KY6V here. Tonight's TIN subject is going to be the rise of the Raspberry Pi in ham radio, the ins and the outs, all about the Raspberry Pi computer and all of its multifaceted uses. So I think you're going to have fun and maybe pick up some useful information. So without further ado, let me turn it over to the first narrator. That's Dave, KGW8SZL. Are you ready, sir, from KY6V?
KY6V from GW8SZL. I most certainly am there, Gordon. And I'd just like to welcome everybody to this Thursday's TIN, Thursday Information Net. Okay, I'm going to start about some facts about the Raspberry Pi. And we don't mean the one you can eat. We mean the small board computer, the SBC. Okay, so some facts about the Raspberry Pi. Now, the Raspberry Pi is the most successful computer ever to come out of the United Kingdom. It was designed by Cambridge engineers and computer scientists. The Raspberry Pi has sold more than 40 million units and created a market worth more than $1 billion. The Raspberry Pi is manufactured in the UK and supports more than 300 jobs in both Wales and Cambridge, which is its headquarters. The Raspberry Pi is used in tens of thousands of commercial applications in a variety of industries across the world, with such uses representing 40% of the annual sales of the Raspberry Pi. The Raspberry Pi has created a whole new class of computing device, transforming the way engineers design control systems in industry and they become a standard component of intelligent interfacing. The Raspberry Pi Foundation has supported more than 26,000 teachers in the UK by providing an extensive range of professional development and certification, also bursaries for training, curriculum and teaching resources, community support, and a lot more. The Raspberry Pi's online resources, now coding clubs, programs and competitions have reached millions of people from more than 100 countries, kickstarting a renewed interest in coding for young people. Okay, so what is a Raspberry Pi? Now, before we jump into the Raspberry Pi origin story, let's make sure we're all clued up on what the device actually is. The Raspberry Pi is a type of circuit board sold by the Raspberry Pi Foundation in the United Kingdom. It's a single board computer that is designed to be cheap, accessible and tailored to educational use. A standard model comes with electronic components and terminals, and there are a variety of additional accessories and add-ons that can be purchased too. The operating system for all Raspberry Pi devices is Linux, which is an open source operating system that interfaces between hardware and software programs. The programming language of the Raspberry Pi is Python, a popular programming language used across a wide range of applications and websites. The reason that it shows Python is because it's very simple for beginners to use, and it also you can use it for more advanced programming as well. Now, its purpose is to teach young people, or anyone interested in computing, the fundamentals behind computers and actually how they work. The foundation also has a particular focus on teaching coding and programming. Okay, so how did the Raspberry Pi come about? The origin of the Raspberry Pi. Now, Raspberry Pi first came into existence in 2006 at the University of Cambridge in the university's computer laboratory. The computer scientists working on the project included Eben Upton, who was the most important figure in the mini PC's creation, as well as Rob Mullins, Jack Lamb, and Alan Mycroft. Led by Eben Upton, the whole team was united in the aim of ensuring new students were familiar with the technical aspects of computing. Another concern for them was how the computer science syllabi had begun to emphasize the use of computers in place of really understanding the mechanisms behind them. At this time, they were mainly interested in university-level students, but soon widened their scope to include school-aged children as well. Now, spurred on by their goal to make the ins and outs of computing easily obtained knowledge, they formed the Raspberry Pi Foundation. Over the course of 6 years, they worked relentlessly to create a cheap and accessible device that could be used in schools to teach programming. Their ultimate goal was to make a computer device that could be used to teach students how computing really works. Speaking to Cambridge University about the Raspberry Pi, Upton stated, "Given how far we come, it's sort of funny to remember how parochial our ambitions were at the start." There was a massive decline in the number of people applying to study computer science. There was a feeling that if we could get a program or a piece of hardware into the hands of young people at the right point in their lives, we might be able to do something to reverse that decline, Eben Upton went on. The foundation's first release was in February 2012, with the board being revised on multiple occasions since then. Today it's available in two models, the Model A and the Model B, each of which comes with a large number of different generations, so like the Pi 1, 2, 3 and 4, and we're all waiting for the Raspberry Pi 5 to come out as well. Okay, this is CW8SZL. Would anybody like to check in? Any questions, comments at this point? If you would like to do that, please call now. GW8SNL, listening.
K2HA.
Okay, I've got Fred the Happy Amateur, K2HA. Is there anybody else? Okay, it's just you there, Fred, K2HA. Go ahead, from GW8SNL.
Well, thank you, Dave. This is Fred, K2HA, over here in Broomall, Pennsylvania. And, I just unwrapped my my 4B. Haven't played with it yet. Still reading the instructions. So I got the one with the keyboard. But what's the difference between, you said A's and B's. So basically, what's the difference between A and B?
K2HA from 2W8SZL. Well, that's an easy one. The B model is a more advanced one, more RAM and, better performance. You can actually look them up for the exact specs. But the B has got more resources than the Model A. Fred, go ahead.
Okay, very good. I have more questions later. Thank you, Dave. Peace and blessings. Keep going.
Yeah, out of interest, Fred, when you got the Pi 4B, well, how much RAM has it got? Have you got the 4 or the 8 or the 2? Or go ahead.
I think it comes with the 4. It comes with the power supply, comes with a case, and a keyboard. I don't know if I don't think it has all the cables, though. So I'm going to be scrounging around trying to get the right cables. Okay, this is Fred, K2HA.
Yeah, okay there, Fred. Yeah, that's a good one. Just make certain that you keep it cool, because they can run rather hot, the Pi 4Bs, that's for sure. But I'm sure you've got all that taken care of there. Okay, do you have anything further at this time, Fred? Go ahead.
Dave, thank you for bringing that subject up. I was watching a video, and a person recommended putting heat sinks on the microprocessors and the different chips. So would that help?
From GW8SZL, yeah, definitely, most definitely. But the actual processor chip in the Raspberry Pi 4, if it gets to 80 degrees C, that's Celsius, I can convert that off the top of my head into Fahrenheit, it'll start throttling back, and it'll start going slower, and to protect itself, shall we say, from self-destruction. But yeah, heat sinks and a nice fan on there as well, if it will be perfect, Fred, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. This is Fred, K2HA. So, if you put the heat sinks on, how do you mount the fan?
Okay there, Fred. I'm not sure what case you got with it, but there are cases available where you can mount the fan and then run it off the 5-volt positive and negative on the GPIO pins. Or if you can run a 5-volt fan a bit slower on the 3.3-volt output on the GPIO pins. So I can say that if you have a look on Amazon and other places, you will find cases where they've already got fans on them, or facilities where you put your own fan on the actual case there, Fred. Go ahead.
Okay, great idea. Okay, I will look and investigate that, because I did see a circuit board that did come with a fan built in, but that's not the one I have. Okay, thank you, Dave. GW8 is SZL, K2HA.
Yeah, no problems at all there, Fred. Yeah, there are some with the, the boards that got the fan mounted as well, but it's just easy just to, just got a case and went up and put a fan on it myself and ran it off the 5-volt GPIO output on the pins there. Okay, if you've got any questions, please feel free to drop me an email as well, Fred, and I'll do my best to help you out. Okay, do we have any further check-ins or questions at this time?
Hey, I'm on Dive, the guy tried to strike you.
Victor echoes to me, Mike Yank Oscar.
Okay, I've got John, that's EK3HJQ, and I think it was Victor Echo 3, Mike Yankee Oscar. Okay, I'll go to you there, John, first, or go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Not much to add, just because we're from the other system, because I heard you talking about Raspberry Pis. Well, I don't have any Raspberry Pis, so really can't comment. Got some Arduinos. That's about as close as I get to them. Anyway, thanks for the net, VK3HJQ.
VK3HJQ from GW8SNL. Thanks for checking in there, John. And I didn't know that you didn't have any Raspberry Pis there. Hi, hi. Okay, next we got is Victor Echo 3. I think it's Mike Yankee Oscar, but I might have got that one a bit wrong. So over to you, sir, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima with the first day information net on the SCAS conference.
Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima, you got that correct. Victor Echo 3, Mike Yankee Oscar. Roger, roger on that call sign copy. This is Zachary. I'm calling in from Toronto, Canada, into the CN Tower, going up on 449.8 MHz and down on 444.8 MHz. And taking a little break on a Thursday evening here in Toronto. There's quite a thunderstorm going on, so I'm glad I'm indoors and calling in from my bedroom. So no thunderstorms in here, and it's an indoor antenna, so don't need to worry about lightning hitting my radio. Watching the storm, watching the rain come down, comfortable in my under my roof. There's no rain in here, and just calling in to see who's on the air. I just got a new digital interface cable for my radio, so I might check that out later tonight as well. Just want to see how people are doing. Back to next control.
Victor Echo 3, Mike Yankee Oscar from Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima. Yep, I can see you coming in through the CN Tower repeater there in Toronto, and reading you perfectly fine. And, keep out of those thunderstorms and stay safe, that's for sure. But if you're going just operating indoors there and got nothing outside connected, you should be fine. But stay safe and well, and thanks for checking in and let us know that you're listening there all the way from Toronto there as well. Okay, I'm going to clear with VE3MYO, and next up we have is Chief, that's W4RFJ. Are you ready to continue the Raspberry Pi story there, Chief? Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't realize you'd already been to the end of yours. GW8SNL, this is W4RFJ, and daydreaming here a little bit. So let me get right into this. So why is it called a Raspberry Pi? Well, at the time of the Raspberry Pi's inception, it was a very popular trend for computer manufacturers to name their products and devices after fruit. Apple is arguably the most famous example of this naming convention, but other companies like BlackBerry followed suit. Raspberry Pi bought into this trend, naming their computer after the humble but sweet berry. It's also supposedly a reference to the common expression, blowing a raspberry. But why is it called a Raspberry, quote, Pi, unquote? Well, that's actually relatively simple. The Pi refers to the Raspberry Pi's programming language, Python. Of course, it's also a bit of a nod to the mathematical concept of Pi, 3.14125. Let me grab a nickel. The Raspberry Pi Foundation is what we're going to talk about next. The Raspberry Pi wasn't created to turn its founders into billionaires or to create a profit-yielding company that generated value for shareholders. Instead, the focus was always on charitable and educational concerns, with its central aim being to give young people access to programmable hardware at a cheap price and to encourage the next generation of programmers and developers. All profits made by the foundation are put straight back into the running of its education programs, resources, and events worldwide. The Raspberry Pi has helped lead to a revived interest in coding among young people through its online resources, coding clubs, including Code Club and Coder Dojo, programs and competitions which have involved millions of people from more than 100 countries. Today, the Raspberry Pi Foundation is a key member of a consortium which includes STM Learning and BCS. This is a UK government-funded initiative to provide support in computer education in schools. A bit about the Raspberry Pi founders. In childhood, Eben Upton was a big fan of the BBC Micro, one of the two great Cambridge design computers from the 1980s, the second being the Sinclair Spectrum. These computers were instrumental in inspiring the next generation of computer fans to code. Time to reset. But the BBC Micros did more than just instill a love of programming in Upton. It also made him enthusiastic about low-cost computing, which could be accessed by young people. There were lots of conversations going around at the time that we should remake the BBC Micro, that it might be an answer to get young people interested in coding, said Upton. But designing a low-cost but powerful computer was going to require an entire Cambridge computer scientist team, which included professors Robert Mullins and Alan Mycroft, as well as entrepreneur Jack Lang and some other Cambridge alumni. The team worked together to create four staple requirements that the Raspberry Pi had to have. It had to be a programmable piece of hardware. It had to be fun, which means that the team was especially keen that the device should capture the spirit of the 1980s when they had first got into computers through gaming and programming. They wanted the Raspberry Pi to have the same element of fun that would make learning, computing, and coding easy and natural. It also had to be affordable. They were also adamant that the device be accessible from a price perspective. They settled on an initial price of $25, as that was comparable to the cost of textbooks at the time, making it an affordable expense for school children, with schools easily able to subsidize the cost for families that couldn't afford it. Okay, at this time, the fourth item that it had to be, I'm going to let Greg take care of, but before we do that, let's see if we got any check-ins or any questions. This is W4RFJ with the South Cars Thursday Information Net. Come now.
Yeah, but that's RHJQ with a question, Roger.
Okay, John, go ahead.
So did you say the Raspberry Pi was started at Cambridge Uni in the UK?
According to the documentation I have in front of me, yes, sir.
Wow, well, yeah, because my son's actually doing some work with Cambridge and Oxford University at the moment in the UK, so well, there you go. Learn something new every day. Anyway, thanks for that.
No problem. Thanks for jumping in there. Good to hear your voice, John. All right, anybody else like to ask any questions or just check in? It's go ahead and come now. I'll take them one at a time. Okay, well, hearing none, let's pass it over to Greg, KE5ALF, the alien life form. Why don't you give us the fourth requirement and carry on with your reading. Are you there, Greg? W4RFJ.
KE5ALF and W4RFJ. Yes, I am, sir, and I'll go ahead with that fourth reading. The fourth one was it had to be robust, as the device was aimed at kids and young people. It had to cope with a little rough and tough. We really wanted children to have their own Raspberry Pi, and that meant it had to withstand being put in a school bag and taken out 1,000 times, said Upton. The first prototype came to fruition in 2006. But it wasn't until 2012 that the team created a product that satisfied all their requirements and was ready for distribution. And it was a first of its kind, in fact. Nobody had made a low-cost computer that could run an operating system like Linux. The goals and intentions of the project were unique, providing an accessible and low-cost device for anyone and everyone. This made programming a possibility for people of all ages and backgrounds, which was a groundbreaking and democratic initiative at the time. In 2013, just a year after its release, it won the Index Design Award. Then in 2017, it won the Royal Academy of Engineering's McRobert Award. And there you have it, the history of Raspberry Pi, from its origins at the University of Cambridge to its place in the world today as one of the most popular microcomputers around. So what makes the Raspberry Pi so useful? Well, it's a very small and has a lot of computing power for its small size. The Raspberry Pi is a very cheap computer that runs Linux, but it also provides a set of GPIO, which means general purpose input and output pins, allowing you to control electronic components for physical computing and exploring the Internet of Things, IoT. A few examples of the uses of the Raspberry Pi are desktop PC, wireless print server, media server, game servers, Minecraft being just one example. Retro gaming machines, robust controllers, stop-motion cameras, web servers, and the list goes on and on. Time to reset. Why is the Raspberry Pi so extensively used these days in ham radio? Well, they are pretty cheap even due to the shortage the prices have risen. They are appearing again, and it is the mission of the Raspberry Pi Foundation as a registered charity to keep the prices as low as possible. Here's a list of the uses the Raspberry Pi can be used for. This is not a complete list by far, but it will give you an idea of just how flexible a Raspberry Pi can be. All-Star Node, Echolink Node, PiStar, RTL and SDR Scanner, Ham Clock, Satellite Tracker, a Weather Station, Repeater Controller, R2 Cloud Project, Slow Scan TV Security Camera, Drone Control, Antenna Rotator Control, CW Code Keyer, GPS Clock, which includes Time Sync and Position, Real-Time Clock, which needs additional hardware, by the way, Packet Radio using Hamlib, Direwolf, XStar, and Linpack, FL Rig for Transceiver Control, and FL Digi for Data Mode, WSJTX for data modes including FT8 and FT4, JTDX data modes, Grid Tracker, which displays connections on a map, JS8 call data mode, PAT, which is Winlink, ZY Grib, weather data visualization, CQRLG, log, ham radio logbook, TQSL, LTOL, TW support, GP Predict, satellite tracking, QSST for slow scan television, GQRX SDR, FreeDV for digital voice, VOACAP for propagation prediction, Chirp for programming transceivers, QTEL and Echolink client, DRATS for D-Star communication, Cubed SDR with SDR Play, RSP SDR, ADS-B receiver with SD replay, Virtual Radar to display aircraft, XDX, a DX cluster client, and XCWCP, which is Morse code tutor. So how do you get this software on your Raspberry Pi? Well, as the Raspberry Pi does not have a standard hard disk drive or solid state drive, there are two ways to do it. The Raspberry Pi uses a micro SD card instead. It uses a Class 10 micro SD card for best performance. And method one, as the author of the software has compiled it into a package, then all you need to do is download the compiled package to your computer. Then you need to flash it onto a micro SD card that you will be using in your Raspberry Pi. Gaming machines, robust controllers, stop machine cameras, web servers, and the list goes on. Oh, sorry, wrong thing. There are many packages out there that you can use. Balin Etcher is very simple to use and is recommended, but be very careful selecting the correct drive letter that represents your micro SD card. As if you get the wrong drive, it will overwrite the drive. It does give you a "Are you sure?" message before starting to flash the drive, though. Let me reset here real quick. Method two, you can install the recommended operating system, Debian, or Ubuntu usually suffices, and then follow the install instructions for the software you want to install. Just copy and paste the necessary code, turn the terminal screen on the Raspberry Pi. At this time, I'm going to ask if there's any questions or check-ins.
K2HA.
K2DY.
KE5ALF to K2HA. Your turn.
Okay, thank you very much, Greg. This is Fred, K2HA. The SD card, I think the one that comes with my Raspberry Pi is 32 gig. Is there a limit for the Raspberry Pi 4B? That's the first question. Second question is, if you install different operating systems, so you could just switch out the SD cards and have a completely different computer. That's right, K2HA, just two questions.
Dave or Chief, either one of you two would like to answer that question for him, sir?
KW8SZL.
KE5ALF.
Okay there, Greg, from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. Okay, Fred, the maximum size of the SD card a Raspberry Pi 4 can actually support, this is from a technical standpoint, it can support an SD card of up to 2 terabytes, but this is way above what the typical user would go for. Basically, I've run a maximum of 64, and normally, for what All-Star nodes and general bits and pieces, 32 gig is more than enough there, Fred. And I missed the other question. Can you repeat it, please, Fred?
Okay, very good, Dave. This is Fred, K2HA. Thank you for that answer. And if you are setting your computer up differently, so you could download the, I think the one that I have is plug and play. So it already comes with the software loaded on the SD card. But if I wanted to download the full suite, so I could just put in another SD card and essentially have then, I could switch them out and have two different operating configurations. This is Fred, K2HA.
Okay there, Fred from GW8SZL. You most certainly can do that. For example, I don't normally just do different operating systems. Say, for example, I've got like WSJTX for FT8, FT4, and WSPR and all the other modes it supports on one SD card. Before I actually managed to accumulate quite a few Raspberry Pis, I actually did exactly what you mentioned. But yeah, you could. It's not just limited to the Debian and the Ubuntu operating system. As long as the actual operating system will run on the actual processor, the ARM side of things, you can actually put virtually anything you want to on there. And if you do a Google search for what operating systems you can run on the Raspberry Pi, you'll find an actual rather long list. But yes, you can do that. That's not a problem at all. But as I said, I got WSJTX, JS8Call on the same SD card. In fact, there is, that'll be coming up in a little bit anyway on here. But yes, you can do that. That's not a problem at all. But as I said, once I had more than just a couple Raspberry Pis, I just leave what's on the SD card and let them run. So, yep, and you can also run Packet on there as well. there, Fred. K2HA, KW8SZL.
Thank you, Dave. This is Fred, K2HA.
Dave, just a quick question for VK3HJQ.
Yeah, VK3HJQ, KW8SZL. Go ahead, John.
Why didn't they go with the stupid SD card? Why didn't they just put some onboard memory, or was it they wanted to keep the price down?
Yeah, a bit of both, and they needed to keep it at a small size. Remember, it was originally done for educational establishments, and school children throwing them in their bags and whatever. Needed to keep the actual size of the actual board as small as possible, and obviously, due to the market, it was originally destined for, shall we say, when they're blown out of, all proportions that they ever, that the design team ever thought about, it would never go that far. Yeah, it's the costs and physical size. John, go ahead.
Yeah, okie dokie, because I couldn't think of anything worse than having an SD card plugged into the one. Oh, Robert's waiting. Okay, Robert. Thanks, Dave. Back to Netflix at RageDQ.
Okay, this is KE5ALF. Do we have any more questions at this time?
VK2DY again.
VK2DY, go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning. This is Robert, VK2DY in Kellyville Ridge, New South Wales, but all part of the urban sprawl that is Sydney. Yeah, just not really a question, just sort of a statement. My preferred Raspberry Pi is the Pi 400. I absolutely love it. It's just, all it is a Raspberry Pi that's been sort of turned on its side and away and stuck in a keyboard. But it so much reminds me of my youth spent with Amiga 1200s and Commodore 64s. Just to have a computer and a keyboard again is psychologically a great advantage, and I absolutely love it. And yes, Fred is right. You can switch out as many operating systems as you want, and because SD cards are cheap, if you want to experiment and you don't want to damage something you spent a long time setting up, you just copy it and keep a copy aside. And if you mess up badly, you can just go back to the copy. So yeah, I think the SD card was a brilliant choice. VK2DY, back to Ned.
KKE5AOF, do we have any more comments or questions at this time before we turn it over to the next narrator? Okay, seeing none, this is KE5AOF. Turn it over to KO4UMQ. Woody, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, and thank you, Greg, and thank you for the reading. This is Woody, KO4UMQ, and I'll be the last narrator this evening. So obviously, method one, if it's available, is the easiest, especially if you are not familiar using the Linux command line. One of the most common uses of a Raspberry Pi in ham radio is as an all-star node. So how does an all-star node work? All-star is a means of conversing with digital voice over the internet from an FM amateur handheld radio to an all-star node anywhere in the world. It provides direct amateur-to-amateur communication and connection to nets, including connected FM repeaters. All-Star also supports full duplex operation. There are two ways to set up an All-Star node. The most common is to connect the Raspberry Pi to a handheld such as a Baofeng 888 Sierra via a modified sound fob. Configuring it this way allows you to use another radio to communicate via your All-Star node. The second way is a radioless All-Star node. Basically, it is just a microphone directly connected to the node. There is no RF involved if constructed this way. Both configurations need an internet connection. You can use Wi-Fi or direct ether wired connection. Wherever possible, it is best to use the direct ether wired connection as it reduces the chance of packet loss that is quite common on Wi-Fi. There are two commonly used software packages for All-Star nodes, All-Star Link and Ham VoIP. Even though you can run All-Star on a Raspberry Pi personally, I would use Ham VoIP. All-Star Link is better suited to running nodes in the cloud on the Debian and Ubuntu operating systems. How do I get an All-Star node number? Just go to www.allstarlink.org and register on the site. A copy of your ham radio license will be needed to upload to verify that you are actually licensed. Once you have registered, just go to the portal, then node settings, and request a node number. You will receive an email to your registered email address once it has been set up. Let me reset the timers, please. So what software does All-Star use? All-Star software is based on a modified version of Asterisk, which is widely used in telephone systems. And how do I build an RF-based All-Star node? More detailed information, including pictures, is available from many sources on the Internet, but this is a brief summary. Step 1, modify a Baofeng 880S radio, this involves some soldering, to make a low-power version of the node. You will need to remove the power amplifier transistor and make a few very simple modifications to the board. The reason for removing the PA transistor is due to the duty cycle that the node radio must endure and the associated heat dissipation of the PA transistor itself. Just consider that you are listening to a net that lasts a couple of hours. The node radio will be transmitting continuously, retransmitting the net to your handheld radio. You can use any node radio you want, but due to the low cost of the Baofeng, they are normally the choice, as well as that the modifications need are well documented on the Internet. And then step 2, modify a CM108. These devices can be found on a well-known auction site very cheaply. Go for the surface mount version if you can. And step 3, set up a buck converter to supply 5 volts for the Raspberry Pi and put a 1N5408 diode or equivalent in series with the positive power cable connected to the back of the radio, with which will supply the necessary 4.3 volts supply for the 888S. And step 4, wire the CM108 to the Baofeng 888. This node fits nicely into a plastic electronic project box that's about 130 by 170 by 55 millimeters. As previously mentioned, details, instructions with pictures are widely available on the Internet. Please break for more. So how do you connect and disconnect from All-Star nodes? If you have built the RF All-Star node, you have the following options. 1. Control it from the DTMF keyboard on your handheld or other radio. Or 2. Use the software called Supermon or Allmon, where you can control it from your web browser on your PC by entering the Raspberry Pi's IP address followed by /supermon. If you are using a cloud-based hub using an ASL version of All-Star, you obviously do not have the DTMF option, but the Supermon and Allmon options are still available to you. Supermon is also known as Allmon on steroids and is a very good choice. Supermon is installed on your All-Star node itself and is available by doing a Google search on HamVoIP Supermon, where you will find a very useful PDF file. Please be aware that there are two different versions of Supermon out there. One is for the HamVoIP version and the other is for the ASL version, so ensure you install the correct version. Also, in the Asterisk software, you can configure an Echo Link bridge, so anybody connected to your All-Star node will be bridged to Echo Link as well. Let me reset the timers. Now that you have your All-Star node and optional Echo Link bridge set up, you can add a digital bridge if you so wish for DMR, NXDN, D-Star with additional transcoding, System Fusion YSF, and P25. You can select all the digital modes or just select one. It would be best just to add one digital mode at a time and test it thoroughly before adding another. Now, how does all this magic actually happen? Well, there is a piece of software called DV Switch Server that enables you to do this. I won't go into the installation details, as this is also widely available on the internet and can easily be found. All the above also works nicely if you use the All-Star Link ASL package and install it in the cloud as a hub. Obviously, if it is cloud-based, you can't have a node radio attached. PiStar and Raspberry Pi. You can create your own Raspberry Pi hotspot for digital modes. You will need to purchase a hat for your Raspberry Pi to do this. This just slides on to the GPIO pins on your Raspberry Pi. Ensure you align the pins correctly. Let me reset. Again, you will need to flash the PiStar software onto the micro SD card using Balena Etcher as with the All-Star Node software. Just boot up the Raspberry Pi and put its IP address into your browser, and you will have nice dashboard that you can use to configure it. Once again, there is loads of information available on the internet to achieve this. If you are looking for some great information on the Raspberry Pi and ham radio, go and take a look at https://dl1gkk.com. Any further questions or comments? If so, please call now. Okay, with no other further questions or comments, we're going to go ahead and close the net. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming by this evening and being part of the SCARS VOIP. And this has been SCARS VOIP. Net schedules and general information may be found on the SCARSVOIP.com website. Again, this is KO4UMQ saying 73 and closing this VOIP session. The net is now closed. Good evening, everyone.